Good afternoon. This is Maggie D., Disability and Senior News Report. We have as our guest today Daniel Julian, who is a director-producer of a documentary film about one very special human being. And do you want to introduce yourself, Daniel, and your subject matter?
Sure. My name is Daniel Julian, and I'm an independent filmmaker living in the San Francisco Bay Area. And one of the people I work with, her name is Mia Rodolfo-Siozon, and I thought, like Maggie mentioned, that she was a very special person and decided to do a film, a documentary film about her life story.
How did you meet Mia?
Like a lot of independent filmmakers, I had to add another job, and I used to be running a student exchange organization, and Mia applied to become one of our field coordinators a few years back.
How long ago was that?
That was in 2003.
Oh, not long ago, really.
About 6 years ago.
How did you find out how she became paralyzed, or how did Mia become a quadriplegic?
Well, actually, I didn't find out for a couple of years because she was very discreet about it and wouldn't really say. As a matter of fact, when people were asking her in Berkeley, she lived in Berkeley. She's been living in Berkeley for the last 9 or 10 years. And she would say, oh, I was just in an accident, because she didn't usually want to go into details and I guess, tell her life story, the story of this terrible accident. But I did find out after a few years, a little bit by accident, because she, like I said, she was not really willing to talk about it initially.
Did you ever find out why?
Why she was, I guess what happened is, shall I disclose now what happened?
Sure.
Yeah, she actually was the victim and the sole survivor of the University of Iowa shooting on November 1st of 1991. And I guess because she returned on campus after the accident, she the media were really focusing on her for the next few years until 1996, when she moved to the Bay Area. So when she moved to the Bay Area, it was partly to, one reason was the climate, because she was having difficulties with the cold in Iowa, but also it was to some extent to avoid being the center of attention.
She was kind of a private person.
She was very private. Mm-hmm.
How did you find out about her activist efforts?
She was mentioning all the meetings she was attending with the disabled community in Berkeley. And so I knew she was active, but I didn't know to what extent until we started working on the film, and then I found out all the details.
It's amazing what a person can do when they can't move and can only speak and use facial expressions, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. She was very, very expressive, as a matter of fact, and she was a person that was, had a very, very difficult life, obviously, but she really continued working toward helping others, and I think that's when the difference maybe with a lot of people who are in a similar situation, who have great difficulties to deal with their own life. But she went one step further, and she was an activist before the accident, before the shooting, and she remained an activist after. So it was really during her entire life.
What kind of activist was she before the mass shooting at the university?
The University of Iowa, she was mostly, she was active in defending Central America, for Central America causes. So she was very involved in that movement late 80s and early 90s.
Now, she was a Filipino, wasn't she?
Yeah, she's from Filipino background, but she was born in Manila in the Philippines. But when she was a baby, her parents moved to Iowa. So she was actually raised in Ames, Iowa, went to school there, And then she chose to go to the University of Iowa in Iowa City because it was a more liberal town, and she was very interested in becoming a political activist.
What made you decide to make a film about her, and how did she react to the idea initially?
Well, the reason why I decided is because I was really surprised when I found out, first of all, what happened to her. And also,
were you captivated?
Well, I was a little, fascinated. I was surprised, and I thought she had a very unique life. And also the fact that she wasn't complaining about anything always kind of was something
positive.
Amazing. Yeah, it was very amazing. And so when I found out more about what she had gone through and what she was doing still, because she was working with us with the student exchange program, which was also something that she really enjoyed doing. And she was also on the side doing all this activist job for the disabled community in Berkeley with the city council. And so I thought, that she would be the perfect person to be the subject of a documentary.
Did she date?
She actually had a boyfriend on campus at the University of Iowa, and also remained with him somewhat after the shooting. But I think after that, she was, again, very discreet, and we never actually broached that subject too much. But I had the feeling it was really not one of the important things on our mind.
Now, two members of Mia's family were employed by her as attendants. How did they react to having their lives filmed?
Her mother, as a matter of fact, and one of her brothers were working for her and living with her in a house in Berkeley. And, of course, for all these years, not really at the very beginning, but since she moved to Berkeley, so it had been somewhat like, 12 or 13 years. Actually, our brother Renato was also our attendant in Iowa City for a couple of years. So it has been quite devastating for them, of course, to have her gone now.
When you were filming her, excuse me, about how many hours a day were you together?
We did several interviews, and they each interview lasted probably a couple of hours, and sometimes we would talk to her before, or I would spend time with her after, or even outside of the film interview. So I got to spend quite a lot of time with her during this whole 13 months.
So did you have a lot of film on the cutting floor?
Did I have what?
A lot of film that you didn't use?
Oh, yeah. We had actually, I think, toward the end, like something like 46 hours of footage, and we turned that into a one-hour documentary. So you can see we had a lot. But, of course, it was not only interviews with her. It was interviews with a lot of people in Iowa, our professors and our doctor, our attorney, a lot of people, and also members of our family, our other brothers, our mom. And so we had interviewed our other attendant, who became a friend of hers, Kelly. And so we have interviews of other people, not only of her.
Now, was Kelly the person that was with her when she was diagnosed at the end?
Yes, when she was diagnosed with cancer, yeah.
I viewed the documentary last night. It was just captivating.
Thank you.
Now, so you must have had a very difficult time cutting out part of that documentary to decide what would remain and what would not.
Yeah, obviously. I mean, a film gets put together really during the editing stage, so you have to leave a lot of things that might be less interesting. You have to find a structure, and so we worked a lot around that. So we had actually, it took about 4 months of almost full-time editing to come up with the final cut.
What is the family dynamic like?
Mia and her brother Renato, who lived with her and all these years and was one of the attendants, were very, very close. They really had similar humor. They would go to the same movies. They had common friends. So they were extremely close. And Mia's mother also was very close to her, obviously.
Her mom seemed like a jewel.
Yeah, she's a very dynamic, active woman. And so I think it's in that family, there is a history of very, very strong women going several generations in the Philippines.
How did Maya's disability affect the family, and how did they deal with it? She must have had her ups and her downs and her sadnesses and joys.
Yeah, well, I think like the rest of us, she had, you know, ups and downs, but I don't know that she had many more than a person, able-bodied person. But for them, a lot of their life, of course, revolved around her. So I think their life was really changed. Her mother had just retired when the shooting took place. And
the shooting in Iowa or the shooting for the documentary?
The shooting, I'm talking about the accident, the shooting in Iowa.
Ah.
So it was a total change of, you know, to all of a sudden live and have to take care of your daughter full time, because actually it took three attendants because, you know, she needed care around the clock. So Renato, our brother, his life was also changed completely because he was just actually a graduate student at PhD student at UC Berkeley when the
oh no kidding
was, yeah. And so first, like I said, Mia remained in Iowa for a couple of years, and then he went there, and then when she moved to Berkeley, he decided to spend also his time becoming also a full-time attendant with her. So I think both of their lives, his mother, her mother, and her brother were, you know, entirely revolving around Mia, at least for, 40 hours per week.
Well, it's amazing how life can change. And, of course, we, you know, heard about a recent actress that had a skiing accident, and, you know, she seemed to be okay and then developed a headache and gone the next day. It just is pretty mind-bending.
Yeah, overnight, like Natasha Richardson, yeah.
Now, how did the family, people have colds, people have vacations, and, you know, Mia was very involved in the disability world. She was part of a disability commission in Berkeley and greatly admired by the disabled community. I never met her in person. I saw her from afar across a room. But her friends were very, very committed to her. And she seemed to have a wonderful sense of humor, but yet a very quiet humor.
Yes. She was, usually pretty quiet, but at the same time outspoken. When she had something to say, she was not timid or anything, but she was actually a member of that disability commission with the Berkeley City Council for 8 years, and she also was the chair for 2 years during that time.
And what a dynamic person she was on this city council. She represented the disability community so beautifully, but she also wasn't the so-called poster child either.
No, I don't know.
She was dealing with city business.
Yeah, definitely, with housing and important issues for the disabled community.
What was Maya's attitude in dealing with her final diagnosis, which it just boggles my mind, as though she had not had enough being a quad and such a dynamic person, then all of a sudden she was diagnosed. What happened?
Yeah, that happened. It was in May of 2007 that she was diagnosed with breast cancer. But, it was very bad that first summer, and she almost died the summer after the month of May. But then they found a drug that was actually very efficient. And so she got a lot better, and she became, again, very optimistic and extremely active again. And she thought, she was just dealing with it the way she has been dealing with all the other things, difficult things in her life. So it didn't really affect her mental state too much. Obviously, she had to go through chemo every 3 weeks and for several hours. But she remained fairly optimistic.
Well, and I think, too, I gathered from the documentary that the doctor said she might have to be on this chemotherapy for a lifetime.
Yes.
That had to be devastating to her.
Yeah, well, it was. She's complaining. She said, shoot, I thought I would grow my hair again, and that's not going to happen. And so, but again, you know, after a few days, she accepted the verdict, so to speak, and, you know, got on with her life. That was really her attitude all the time.
You must have had a great admiration for her.
Oh, definitely. She was a very unique person.
Now, let's go into Kelly a little bit. She was a friend as well as being an attendant.
Well, Kelly was actually hired from an ad on Craigslist and remained with Mia for 7 years, and so obviously they became very close.
That frequently happens, I think, between the person that needs the attendant and the attendant. They sort of develop a bond that's very hard to describe.
Yes. And Kelly actually still staying in the house now. I mean, she's been living with Renato, Mia, and Sonia, Mia's mother, for the last year and a half.
No kidding.
Mm-hmm. And she has just stayed there after Mia's death in last December.
That has to be helpful, too, because, you know, you're so ingrained with the caring part and, you know, to just suddenly up and move out. Is she an attendant for anyone else?
Actually, she's done some day jobs for several disabled people in the Berkeley area, but not full-time, just a couple of days here and there.
Well, that's good. She has her finger in the pie anyway.
Mm-hmm.
How has working with Mia and making this film changed your view of the disability community?
Well, it was really an eye-opener because the first time she came for an interview, she came and we had a hard time. We had to, you know, there was a step in the door. We had to pull, to lift our chair. And, you know, we...
Oh, and that's a big chair.
Yeah, it's a big chair. It's like 250-pound chair. And so, yeah, we were a little surprised. And, but, you know, she was so willing to do it and so intelligent, obviously very articulate. And so we decided to give her the job, but we didn't know whether she would be able to perform. And as a matter of fact, she has outperformed most of the other coordinators that we've had over the years. So it was quite amazing.
So her disability had nothing to do with her ability to work.
Yeah, exactly. And so it was, you know, again, we put a lot of limit on ourselves oftentimes without being disabled. And it was really... interesting to see someone who had all these difficulties to start with was able to do so much. So it was really an eye opener for me.
Did you grow by realizing that when you get to a challenging place in your life, you take a look at Mia and say, "Gee, this isn't quite so much of a challenge"?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I tend to do that a lot more now, and. But, you know, there is one thing is that growing up, I realized one of my best friends was disabled. And so there must have been some unconscious connection and desire to do this film about Mia because of this past friendship.
It was a close friendship.
Yeah.
Was that a school friendship or neighborhood friendship?
No, he was a son of some of my parents' friends, but he was my age. And it was a different thing. It was an accident at birth. And interestingly enough, his father was a physician, so it was a very, very sad story. So the father always felt like he should have done something, but he couldn't. So, yeah, and we became close friends, and I would visit him every summer and stay with him. And he had also a speech impediment. It was difficult to understand, and as a matter of fact, people were amazed that I was one of the only people to really understand him quite well because we had a good connection.
When did you move away from him?
When I was in my 20s.
Ah. Did you stay connected with him by phone and email? And...
Yes, as a matter of fact, my mother passed away a couple of years ago, and it was in the south of France. I'm from French background, obviously. And
I wouldn't know it.
he attended the funeral, and so I saw him actually a couple of years ago, and we've been in touch by email on a regular basis.
And no doubt you explained your experience with Mia.
Exactly.
What did he say about Mia? Did he see the documentary?
Not yet, but I think I will actually probably in the next few days mail him a DVD of the film, and I'm sure he will. I mean, he sounded very interested, for obvious reasons.
Let's talk about the documentary.
Okay.
Let's talk about when it was done. Was there a celebration? Was there a party? You know, what happened as you shut everything down and you stepped back and said, this is it?
Well, it just turned out that we started shooting, filming in October, November of 2007. And we figured out we were done about a year later. And actually, I think the final touches to the film were made on Election Day, November 4th of last year. And so Mia had requested that we do a last interview with her. It was her request when she wanted to talk about death and dying, which it was a difficult subject to broach, so I didn't know quite how to approach it, but she's the one who actually requested that last interview, and you see some excerpt in the film. So at some point we felt like, you know, we had covered most of the things, and we worked toward having the premiere early in January, and of course we were hoping that she would be present at the premiere of the film, but it didn't happen.
Now, the film is going to be coming up when? What's the date of it's going to be presented?
Well, the film has had its premiere on January 4th at the Parkway Speakeasy Theater in Oakland. And what we're doing now is, it was very successful, and so we have this new showing. There is another Speakeasy Theater in El Cerrito, and we're going to have an encore showing a week from Sunday, on Sunday the 29th at 2 p.m., and it will be followed by a question and answer with Mia's family and brother attending and members of the crew, the same way we did it at the premiere. And other than that, we're applying to many film festivals and eventually to some television station, because the film, being an hour long, can't really have a theatrical release as a feature film, which, you know, usually 75 minutes or longer. And so it will have some other showings in the Bay Area and obviously in Iowa. So we have two showings planned in Iowa on April 12th and 13th, one in Iowa City at the university, on the university campus, and one in Ames, where Mia grew up. So those are the next three showings, the one in El Cerrito in the Bay Area and then two in Iowa.
Now, the film festivals, we only have a few minutes more for the interview. What film festivals are you hoping to submit, or have you?
Well, we have submitted to a whole slew of them in the United States and also in Canada and England. And so it's very competitive, and it has to have a documentary section. So it's, you know, more limited than if it were a feature film with actors. But a lot of festivals now have a documentary section. So we're hoping to, have some success. We have applied to about 30 of them around the world.
My goodness. Mm-hmm. It's not only the procedure of doing the documentary itself, but it's then, you know, showing it and hoping that you win many of the awards. What is the final, I don't even know how to pose the question. What do you want to do with a documentary after you do the film festivals?
Hopefully that, you know, when you get some recognition at film festival, then it's easier to get some contracts with televisions, like, you know, obviously public television would be one of the ones we would shoot for, and other cable outlets. So, I mean, the idea is obviously to reach as many people as possible.
Sure. About what do you think your audience will be when you're done with all of this?
What would be what?
The numbers of people that you think will see this.
I don't know. We had a short trailer, shorter than the one on our website, which is on actually YouTube. And we had like about 1,300 people seeing it in the last month.
So, do you want to give the website or the trailer information?
Yeah, the website of the film is www.miafilm.com.
Do you want to spell that out?
Yeah, Mia would be M as in Mark, I, Y, A, and Miafilm is in one word. So www.miafilm.com.
Great. Now, give me the address of where this is going to be shown on the 29th.
Okay, so it's going to be shown at the Cerrito Speakeasy Theater.
Is that El Cerrito?
It's in the city of El Cerrito, and the address, I believe, is 10700. So it's actually 10700 San Pablo Avenue. And it's at the corner of San Pablo Avenue and Central Avenue, very close to the BART station. So
oh, good. People can get there by BART.
And so we are hoping to have a good turnout from disabled people as well.
Well, that's great. Now, a couple shutdown questions here. You're going to go from El Cerrito. What's your next stop?
Like I said, Iowa City and Ames in Iowa at the beginning of April.
All right. So, and then is that to go to the places that are familiar with the family and the events that happened to Mia?
Yeah, well, also because, you know, the people in Iowa City, of course, remember her, and also there is a lot of interest there from the community at large. So we expect actually a big turnout in both these cities.
When do the film festivals start?
The film festivals are all year round, and they start actually a lot of them March, April through the summer, and even in the fall and through the end of the year. So we're hoping to, you know, succeed in being selected in a couple of those.
And how long have you been producing documentaries?
Oh, many years actually. 30 years ago, I started in France.
Oh my! So this is not a new venture for you.
Not exactly.
But life-changing. Isn't that interesting?
But it is a different one. This one was very special.
Now, do you live then in France and then travel around the world for the film festivals?
No, actually, I'm based in Oakland, California. I've lived about half of my life now in the Bay Area. And so, you know, I travel depending on the subject of the film or depending if we do get into festivals, obviously we'll have to go there. But I'm basically based in Oakland.
Now, will the documentary be advertised anywhere?
Yeah, well...
like in the Berkeley Gazette or whatever the local paper is called?
Yeah, this particular... actually, we had several shows on Channel 7 News in November and December. Cheryl Jennings from the ABC 7 News actually met with Mia, interviewed her and her mom and me, and so I think we were on Channel 7 News about four times in about 5 weeks between November and December of last year.
Oh, good. Now, are you doing any promos on this with any of the news networks?
We're hoping to you know, get some interest maybe from that additional screening and get a couple of journalists there. If we could, that would be great.
Wonderful. Now, if people wanted to get in touch with you to get any other information or have lost what they've jotted down in notes, is there a way to contact you?
I think the best way would be the website, because, you know, I answer email fairly promptly every day, and so that would be probably the best way.
Why don't we give that website address again?
Okay, it's www.miafilm, M-I-Y-A-F-I-L-M, miafilm.com.
And there's a contact us in the website?
Yeah, there is background information, and you know, my email address is on every page of the website, so anybody can, you know, send me an email.
Wonderful. Well, we certainly look forward to hearing that you and Mia were successful in the film festivals. Hopefully you'll give us an update of how things go as you journey around the world with this lovely documentary. I just totally enjoyed it. In fact, my attendant and I watched it. We were just captivated.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you for your time.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.